combating the epidemic of loneliness. A number of recent studies show the same thing. Many people today are suffering from loneliness. And it's not just an emotional state. Medical research reveals that loneliness is bad for your physical health. One report that got a lot of attention equates the effect of loneliness to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. The reduction in lifespan for lonely people and smokers is similar. Loneliness is associated with greater risk of cardiovascular disease, dementia, and other problems. Some blame the transient modern culture for the increase in loneliness. Some blame social media. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the show, we discuss the loneliness epidemic and ideas about how to change our society into a place with more social connection and support. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Loneliness is not something that only affects older people who have lost a spouse and are on their own. People of all ages struggle with feeling lonely. In fact, loneliness is now being called a public health epidemic. Today, we'll learn more about why and what can be done to help. Joining me in the studio, Jeanette Andonian. She is director and associate professor at the University of Southern Maine's School of Social Work. And Dr. Jeffrey Ahlberg is a family medicine physician with Maine Health. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you concerned that someone you know is lonely? Have you found any resources or ways to alleviate loneliness? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you both so much for being here today. Jeanette, when we talk about loneliness, how is this defined? I know it's important to make the distinction between being alone and being lonely.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Loneliness is actually not just about being alone, as you said, though it can be about that too. It's more an internal sense of ourselves, a kind of sense of belonging that extends kind of beyond belonging to communities that extend beyond us. Before I entered academia myself, I was a clinical practitioner and a psychotherapist, and I must say that loneliness expressed as sort of disconnection from others, fears of abandonment, in relationship struggles, a desire for intimacy were pretty common themes that came up for people. So loneliness has really far-reaching implications for mental health and physical health, as we are learning in recent decades. Loneliness and shame often go hand in hand. When people feel outcast or unwanted or outside of a community, it can be a really vicious cycle.
Yeah, I was going to say, it strikes me as something that could snowball.
Yes, it's a vicious cycle. I think that loneliness is more than just a transient state. It's really a more pervasive sense of not feeling connected. Yeah.
Dr. Ahlberg, from a medical point of view, is it any different? Is there an actual diagnosis of loneliness?
Well, I won't say how many decades ago it was when I went to medical school, but it certainly was not. There was no course in loneliness at that time. And in my number of years treating patients, I think the whole bucket of the social determinants of health, which loneliness is one of maybe a dozen or so, including transportation, food security, home security, all those things, is probably the most difficult to tackle. And it's not something, as a practicing doc or a healthcare organization, I have learned a skill set to treat that. Over the years with my patients who have been with me many years, and as I've aged, they've aged, so I've seen in the elderly isolation come up and turn into loneliness in a number of different ways. We touched on a few of those. But it's also, in some ways, I look at it as a bimodal problem. I also see it in my practice. I'm a family doc. You know, the 16, 18 to 24-year-old set. And it's a different type of loneliness, but ever so apparent, I think.
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting, because what you're saying is sort of what these broad studies are showing, isn't it? That the one from Cigna is showing that not only are older people, but this young adult population is possibly the most badly affected of all.
Yeah. It could be, and it's the... Is it the cart or the horse? Is it a mental illness or depression leading to loneliness, or is it vice versa? And that can be in all domains, all age brackets as well.
Yeah, Jeanette, is it that both these populations, whether you're a young adult, 18 to 24, or an older person, they can both be kind of disorienting, can't they? That you're having these huge changes in your life, and it can be confusing and difficult, and whether you've lost a spouse or you're a young person leaving home, what you have been used to and what you have fallen back on is suddenly not there.
That's right. So I think people are more prone to bouts of loneliness during critical transition times across the lifespan. And I certainly think that, in the Cigna study, as you mentioned, that has kind of defined loneliness as an epidemic, they found that... the Generation Z population, those people born between, the mid-1990s, the early 2000s, are found to be the most lonely, according to that research. And if you think about where those people are at this stage of life, they're in a huge period of transition emerging into adulthood from adolescence. And I think those transition times are fraught with difficulties. And I just want to back up a little bit too. I also meant to say earlier that I think loneliness is essentially part of the human condition. I once had a professor in my doctoral program say that we all human beings struggle with how to be alone and how to be together, and how to navigate both, being by yourself and being with others in a way that is that you can live with. So, but I do think that during periods of change and transition, that people are more vulnerable to experiencing loneliness.
Jeffrey, how bad for your physical health is being lonely? Another one of these studies that's been cited widely says it's as bad for you as smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Yeah, I've heard that, and I certainly see that, especially in our aging population with chronic diseases and multiple chronic diseases can escalate much faster if there's loneliness, that is, there's isolation around that. The statistics do show that there's a higher morbidity, mortality, in our citizens, our patients who have loneliness.
Do we understand why?
Well, part of it is I think maybe a inability or a lack of a capacity if you're alone and you don't have the social supports to seek help at a time when you should. And that could be either encouragement to even go to the doctor or seek help for a chronic condition, or just purely just not a recognition of a chronic disease that is kind of escalating, if you will, without recognition on your part.
We'll go now to, excuse me, I'm trying to click my screen and it's not letting me. There we go. We're going to go now to Leonard Kay. He's a professor of social work at the University of Maine. He's also director of the UMaine Center on Aging. Thanks for calling in, Leonard.
My pleasure.
Who is at greatest risk of being isolated and lonely?
Well, it's actually a long list of folks. When it comes to older adults, and it's been estimated that some 43% of older adults may be living in isolation and loneliness at any given point in time. But who's at greatest risk? Well, it's folks, as was mentioned, with physical and functional impairment. It's individuals living alone who are 80 years of age and older. If you're living on low income, you're at greater risk. If you lack certain critical instrumental support, you're at risk as well, meaning access to transportation, the internet, telephone, et cetera. And then folks, again, as was mentioned, who face critical life transitions like loss of a loved one, children moving out, an abrupt retirement, poor health, are at risk. And then finally, and I would say probably those at greatest risk are those who are living with weak or fragile social networks.
What are the consequences of living isolated and lonely life?
They can be lethal. They can be a threat to your very well-being. Higher mortality and morbidity rates. Isolation and loneliness have been associated with dementias, with increased rates of hospitalization, with increased risks of falls, of general poor health practices generally, and greater psychological distress. And then I want to mention also, you're at greater risk of being neglected and exploited and abused.
Leonard, what do you recommend? What do we as a society do about this?
It doesn't have to cost an arm and a leg to respond to really what I feel is a public health issue here. In some cases, it's ensuring that folks don't disengage from their communities and from the world around them. So that means encouraging individuals to be civically engaged, to volunteer their time and effort in the community. That will ensure that they're interacting with others. But in terms of programming, low-cost programs that can be effective include friendly visitor programs, telephone reassurance programs. Meals on Wheels programs provide more than just a nutritious meal. A meal delivered to the home also provides an opportunity for social exchange between two people.
Would you recommend if someone's listening to this program and they kind of want to do something to call their area agency on aging?
Oh, I certainly would. I think that should be the best stop. There are five of them in the state of Maine, and there are area agencies on aging throughout the United States, hundreds of them. And they are truly your experts in terms of being able to connect you to critical resources that can make the difference.
Well, Leonard, thank you so much for calling in today. That's Leonard Kay, and he directs the UMaine Center on Aging, and he's a professor of social work at the University of Maine. I'm going to go to a Facebook post because this is goes straight to something I wanted to ask you all about anyway. Michael on Facebook writes, "My wife passed away 2 years ago, and now I'm the single parent of a teenage son. I find my social existence was totally confined to shared friends, couples. Today, I feel like a third wheel, and I don't really socialize. Often, I find myself wanting to catch a show, concert, but have no single friends to reach out to or even to talk to. Outside of my family members, I don't have anyone but myself to lean on. There have been many life firsts since she passed when I could have used a shoulder for support." And I'm getting choked up reading it. But Jeanette, mm-hmm. This is what we're finding in the studies, is that people who are single parents with children may be the worst off.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really difficult situation to be in, to have that kind of drastic change and responsibility for a child and talk about a transition. And I would just hope for the person who posted that comment that even friends that were couples, that they would still reach out to you and that you wouldn't hesitate reaching out to them for support, for socialization, and also to think about maybe even joining some other kind of community group that you might meet new people with common interests that might help to buffer you from some of the effects of loneliness. And also just to point out, too, that you're grieving, and that that's another dimension added to your sense of loneliness that that can't be overlooked.
All right. Well, I'm going to go to John calling from Casco. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi there. Thank you. This is a really important conversation to have, and I appreciate that we're having it. As someone who's, struggled with my fair share of mental health issues, including, depression, I've noticed that periods of, depressive episodes are I'm not sure if it's a symptom of or the cause of the episode, but, you know, loneliness and depression for me seem to go hand in hand. So just hoping to talk a little bit about the link between, you know, depression and loneliness. So thank you.
Thank you, John.
I can maybe say a few words on that. Just certainly, as we've heard, a number of different types of loneliness or causes for that. You know, one, the most obvious might be geographic loneliness. You're living alone, a single person, maybe elderly in the woods. But there's also emotional isolation as well that can be a cause of loneliness there. So I think certainly the depression, the mental illness, and loneliness certainly many, many times go hand in hand. As a practicing physician, that is a conversation I have with many, many of my patients. And I find it not unique to me, but me and my team to be able to work with someone like you to get you to a better place through counseling, perhaps even medication, so that you have the strength to work on that isolation and that loneliness that you're experiencing.
John, I appreciate your call. I'm wondering what you all think is the cause of this epidemic. This book, this week, a book is getting a lot of attention by Senator Ben Sasse, the senator, who is faulting in large part social media, saying that instead of having interpersonal relationships, face-to-face, understanding each other, we have sort of, and I don't want to sort of sum up his book because I haven't read it, but I've seen some interviews and talking about these not meaningful relationships we may be having on social media and leaning on. Do you agree with that, Jeanette?
I do. That was going to be one of my talking points today. I'm glad you brought it up. It's ironic, you know, in an era of constant digital connectivity, how we can experience loneliness. But, you know, I think this digital connectivity has a paradoxical effect of creating a sense of alienation. And social media, for instance, can make people feel like everybody else has this kind of glossy, rich sort of life, and can make you feel like you're left out, can create and you know, social media creates a lot of artificial images of life. I mean, people choose what they post on Facebook, for instance, you know, their selfies, themselves at parties or traveling to exotic places or whatever, can create a sense that you are left out or missing out. And that contributes to a sense of feeling lonely, especially if you're already feeling lonely, and maybe even if you're not. And I think that social media can have a particular draw for people who are already feeling lonely. People get pulled into that as kind of a replacement for face-to-face, real-time contact with other human beings, and it doesn't replace it, and that's a problem.
Can I just add some of the studies on, and there have been a number of studies on this, still are kind of on the fence. There's no one study or no set of studies that have really confirmed what I think most of us feel is probably a big, big cause of what we're talking about.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We're talking about loneliness. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Fogtown Brewing Company in Ellsworth, committed to offering unique beers brewed on-site with Maine grains and local ingredients, fogtownbrewing.com, and Rooster Brother, the store for cooks and those who love them, at the Union River Bridge in downtown Ellsworth.
On the next Fresh Air, the creator of the Netflix comedy series BoJack Horseman, Raphael Bob Waksberg. BoJack is an animated comedy with a cast of humans and animals. BoJack is a horse who's a depressed, alcoholic, sexist former sitcom star. The series satirizes Hollywood and pop culture, and the new season is set in the era of the Me Too movement. Join us.
Coming up tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Are you interested in traveling to Sicily? Maine Public Travel is headed to Sicily next May on another of our cultural explorations to this fascinating island. You're invited to join Morning Edition host Erwin Gratz and other friends of Maine Public. Our Many Flavors of Sicily 10-day tour will involve sightseeing, tours, lectures, and music that will offer insight and understanding of Sicily and its people. Learn more about Maine Public's Sicily tour by visiting our website, mainepublic.org. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Understanding Loneliness. Joining me in the studio, Jeffrey Ahlberg, who's a family medicine doctor with Maine Medical Partners, and Jeanette Andonian, director of USM's School of Social Work. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now is Megan Reedy. She is a program officer with the Maine Humanities Council. And Megan, I understand you're planning a forum with Maine Humanities Council that touches on the idea of loneliness. Can you talk about it?
Yes, indeed. On Saturday evening, we'll be having our annual Dorothy Schwartz Forum. And this year, the question that we're posing, that we're gathering people to talk through with each other and with five neat people from broad contexts, is the question, who is we? And the question, the idea of loneliness comes up as a part of that forum because one of the core elements of that question is how do we, who each experience our individual lives fundamentally differently from the way we experience every other life that's going on the planet, how do we as individuals interrelate with other people?
What do you think are some of the ways people can feel more connected to one another?
Well, one way, I think, is by finding reasons to talk with each other. And some of those reasons are things like this forum. We'll be putting a conversation topic in there, bringing some context. We'll have an astrophysicist there, a forestry person there to really adjust our sense of scale. But other things that people can do are things like reading and hearing comments about social media. I think reading all sorts of things, whether it's memoir or fiction, poetry, pretty much you name it, gives a sense of other people's inner lives. There are so many of the people who write things are writing about their own difficulties, their struggles, including maybe especially their struggles interacting with other people. And so reading can help give a sense that a lot of people are lonely. And so loneliness is not paradoxically something that only one of us is suffering.
Thank you so much, Megan. Megan Reedy, Program Officer, hosting the Dorothy Schwartz Forum with the Maine Humanities Council. That's this weekend, and we'll have information about that on our webpage and on our Facebook page. We're going to move on now to Jack, who is calling from Kennebunkport. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. You've mentioned twice the fact that loneliness can kind of lead to dementia. What I wanted to do is reverse that and say dementia can lead to loneliness. I think when people have dementia, their friends withdraw because they don't know how to act, how to behave, what to say, what the dynamics would be now. We're very fortunate here in York County to have a resource in Kennebunk called A Place to Start and A Place to Gather. And it's for people with dementia and their caregivers to come and find socialization and support. And it has been a godsend to me and my wife.
Jack, thank you so much for calling and sharing that resource. Go ahead, Doctor.
Yes, I would have to agree with you, and the studies do show very, very firmly that there is quicker cognitive decline in patients that are citizens that are isolated and perhaps lonely. You mentioned the caregiver part, and we don't recognize that as much. The caregiver, even while giving care to a spouse or a loved one who has a serious illness, perhaps a rapidly progressive dementia, that caregiver can have serious problems with loneliness, certainly during that time, and then after perhaps the loved one passes as well.
Jack, thank you again. And we'll move on to Nancy, who's calling from Saco. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. And I would also be interested in the dress for that last support crew for my neighbor who is dealing with that herself. But I am calling about a friend, and I actually have a few friends who have lost their husbands, and I have a friend who just recently lost her husband at the young age of 60 years old, and he was out riding a bike. He was a fit guy. And I am going down to have a walk with this woman, and it's only been about 10 days. And I'm wondering if when I get there and she says, you know, I'm really not up for this, should I push and make her go out and take a walk with me and talk about just insignificant things and get her mind off of it, or should I let her have her space? And I'll take my answer off the radio. Thank you.
Jeanette?
Well, you probably know your friend better than anybody and about how much you can push and, you know, what kind of response you would get to that. But I would just try to be understanding of where she's at and try to meet her where she's at. And if she doesn't feel up to doing that, maybe she feels up to sitting and having a cup of tea and just talking about something. Or maybe she feels up to going out and not talking about it at all and just going to a movie or someplace else, something that would, you know, where she would be with you but not not feeling pressure to talk about what she doesn't feel she wants to talk about. But I would say, you know, use your own judgment. Don't be afraid to push if you feel like she'll, and see how she handles that. But I think, you know, there's great risk to feeling isolated after you've lost a loved one. And so I would urge you to keep reaching out to her.
Good luck, Nancy. Oh, go ahead.
I'll just like to add to that. The grieving process is very individual. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their own space and their own rate of working through that. Some take a lot longer time than others. I would just say to you to let that person know that you're there when they're ready for you to be there for a contact. And I think that in itself can really help with the loneliness that she's probably experiencing. Mm-hmm.
We'll go to Cindy. The UMaine Center on Aging Senior Companion Program serves 10 Maine counties. Senior Companion volunteers are local caring adults 55 and older who serve between 15 and 32 hours a week, providing companionship to isolated and homebound seniors and respite for family caregivers. To the clients they serve, these volunteers are caring friends who visit 1 to 3 times weekly. They share stories, enjoy time together as friends, and on some occasion volunteer to provide transportation to help clients reach critical locations like the grocery store, doctor appointments, and the pharmacy. So that program is the UMaine Center on Aging Senior Companion Program, and we'll also make sure there's information about that on our Facebook page and web page. Also calling in now, Lori Parham, the state director for AARP in Maine. Lori, what kind of resources would you like to add to the list?
Hi, Jennifer. It's great to be with you today. Loneliness and social isolation are issues that we've been studying, and in fact, our a foundation, the AARP Foundation, has partnered with a number of organizations, including the Area Agencies on Aging and the Gerontological Society of America, to create a website, Connect to Effect. And this features tools and resources not only to help evaluate one's risk of isolation, but also help them look for opportunities locally to get involved. It has links to transportation, local events going on, senior centers. But I also wanted to share that there are really opportunities now through so many of Maine's communities. Libraries are a wonderful place. There's so much programming through our local libraries that they're just a wonderful asset here in Maine. And we're also seeing through our work across Maine with our age-friendly communities a real effort to combat the challenges of isolation and loneliness through walking programs were mentioned earlier. But walking programs, coffees, monthly coffees to bring people together, emphasis on looking at the winter months when it's harder to get out. Folks don't like to drive, especially if you're older, in the snow and the dark. But if folks who are listening connect to their local communities, their local community center and senior center, they could find a lot of resources in those places.
All right. Well, Lori, thanks so much for calling in. That was Lori Parham, who's the state director for AARP Maine. We're going to move on to Scott, who's calling from Powell Knoll. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to suggest that a good remedy for loneliness is going outside. There's something about being inside a house that can be very depressing. It's traditionally a social setting. And I think it's very helpful to go out in nature without your thoughts. Get off the computer, get away from the music and whatever else you might be listening to, and just go out and enjoy nature.
Well, I appreciate that, Scott. Jeanette, you're nodding.
Yeah, no, I would just agree with that. I think when people are feeling that way and you stay inside the house and you don't go outside into the world, it just makes things worse. And I think certainly being outside, taking a walk, some kind of exercise is also a protective activity. So I would agree with what the caller is saying, yes.
Scott, thank you. And that leads into something I wanted to make sure we touched on this hour. Dr. Ahlberg, how important is not only exercise but enough sleep?
Yeah, I'd like to add to the comment we just had, too. And as I think affectionately say to my patients when they're going through grieving or depression or loneliness, you know, you really need to take care of the machinery. And what that means is eating well, eating healthfully, being as active as you possibly can, getting enough sleep, getting outdoors, doing the walking. And if physically you're feeling as down as you may be feeling mentally, it just escalates the problem and prolongs the problem. That being said, it's not always easy. In our elderly with chronic diseases, debilitating arthritis, and other things, it's hard to get that activity. So. But every small amount counts.
We'll go to Margie, who's calling from Jonesboro. Hi, Margie. We haven't heard from you in a while. Are you doing well?
I'm still here, splitting wood and doing all.
Awesome. So go ahead.
Well, I'll talk briefly. I've been here for 30 years, off and on, alone. Of course, sheep, ducks, and all that stuff, and dogs and cats. But at any rate, I told my sons and everybody I know, never lose yourself. Everyone is entitled and gifted with something in their being that they can latch on to. It's not everybody else that'll give it to you. You have it in yourself. So look for it and do it. I did painting. I built a few buildings. I did things. And you can go out and shop and talk to people. And like I'm talking to you. I mean, and I think public television, I mean radio is the best. Because talking to you gives me, and listening to you, is someone. But, I mean, don't lose yourself, because everyone has the ability to do something and a talent within themselves. And that's what I told my two sons. One's an architect. One wrote a book. He's a musician. I couldn't tell one to do the other. I told them, don't lose yourself. Do what you want. Search yourself and find out. Because you're not really alone. You're a wonderful person. Everyone's a wonderful person. Don't think you're bad or you need someone else. Yes, you can have somebody else, but don't lose yourself. That's all I want to say.
Thank you, Margie. Everyone, Jeanette, needs a Margie cheering them on, don't they?
Yeah, I'd say so. I like your attitude.
Thank you so much for calling in. We'll go to Cheryl, who's calling from Clifton. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Hi, I think one of your earlier speakers made the point that I was going to make about that public libraries as being just a wonderful resource to connect with people, to find other people that have similar interests. The local public libraries just have amazing programs to help people connect with people. So that was what I was going to say.
Thank you, Cheryl. We have lots of library fans in our audience. I know it. I wanted to, Dr. Ahlberg, go back to something Margie said in her call, which was she said she kind of just mentioned that she's surrounded by dogs and cats. What do each of you think about the role of pets in combating loneliness?
I can take that. I think that animals have a really powerful role in our lives. And in fact, I think that they can really be hugely protective against loneliness. Dogs, for instance, can be very engaged with people. They're fantastic companions. And I think that that is a really, wonderful way of, if somebody's living alone, to have pets around them so they're not really in the house alone.
I would agree with that, and I do see a number of my patients I've had the pleasure to be working with over the decades to get quite a bit of pleasure from having animals around them, even if they are single otherwise.
I have an email from Sarah. I have found that at my worst times, I am lonely even when surrounded by people and friends. At my best, mentally, I never feel lonely, even when alone for long periods. Vitamin D is key to me feeling generally mentally healthy. You're chuckling.
Yeah, I think vitamin D, if it comes from being out in the sun, I think is a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. I think the jury is perhaps not in totally on vitamin D or other supplements. That being said, if it works for you and it's not harmful, I would say just go for it. And if that keeps you strong, so be it.
We're going to take another quick break, but first, a word about tomorrow's show. For those of you who are expecting author Anne Lamott to be on the show, she will not be our guest due to scheduling conflicts. Instead, we're going to talk about the status of marijuana regulation in Maine and also Canada's new legalization of cannabis. Email your comments or questions on that topic to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does New England Cancer Specialists, 50 years of working toward better outcomes for Maine patients. Learn more at newenglandcancerspecialists.org.
Florida has some of the toughest building codes in the country, but certain areas are exempt from rules to protect them against storms like Hurricane Michael.
The garage door was shaking. It was like somebody was trying to get in and the inside door was shaking. I knew the roof had gone at that point because everything was shaking. I thought, just hang in there and I had faith everything was going to be okay.
Strengthening building codes after Hurricane Michael. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
From 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up at 2 o'clock after Maine Calling, it's World Affairs. Economist Jeffrey Sachs, author of A New Foreign Policy Beyond American Exceptionalist, will be the guest. So again at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, loneliness and its effects on health. Joining us today, Jeanette Andonian with the University of Southern Maine School of Social Work and Jeffrey Ahlberg, a family medicine physician. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. So much out there right now. We've already touched on Senator Sasse's book, but another article that's been circulating is one written by the Surgeon General for the Harvard Business Review about how the workplace is changing and its effect on this epidemic of loneliness. And Jeanette, this is something you're interested in talking about. Excuse me, former Surgeon General.
Yes, former Surgeon General. Yes. I think he's really onto something with that connection. I think the modern workplace culture is heavily and increasingly reliant on digital technology that becomes really more and more the focus of day-to-day work. Translated means that people are more engaged with screens in their daily work life than they are with each other. And even when they are with other people, they're constantly checking their devices because they're expected to be on email and to respond. But I think the sheer volume of digital communication can really invade a person's work life. It takes substantial time and energy to participate and respond to that all. And at the end of the day, people oftentimes find themselves having been alone for most of the day just on their screen. So I think that is a real issue, and I think the Surgeon General has some really excellent points about it.
We have an email from Amber. I feel I must push back a little bit on the face-to-face contact. This may be an anecdote, but when I'm lonely, I find myself more likely to turn to online friends rather than close friends in the real world. There's a sense of camaraderie in many areas of the online world that help me fight loneliness.
That's a really good point you make. I think that some people really do benefit from that, from online contact, and have really positive relationships with people that they're interacting with online. I don't think it's either or. I think that at certain times one might actually feel more comfortable going online and communicating with somebody using digital means. But I think it's when it starts to replace face-to-face contact completely that it can become problematic.
Would you recommend people just sort of pay attention to themselves? If I've spent some time on social media and I feel worse than I did before I went on the computer versus do I feel better? Did it make me feel better to see a picture of somebody's new puppy, or did it make me feel worse to see other people's fabulous vacation to Europe?
Right. I think you're absolutely right, Jennifer. I think that people do need to pay attention to what they're feeling when they're on social media, how it's making them feel, and respond to that accordingly.
We'll go to Alex, who's calling from Dedham. Hi, Alex. Go ahead.
Hi. I am calling. Wow, what a great show, first of all. So much interesting stuff. I was calling, I guess, from the perspective of I'm in my mid-30s, and I definitely have a history of mental illness. Depression is the relevant thing. But when you are in a good space, you know, especially say like when you are happy, you have a happy domestic situation or whatever, don't forget about your single friends, your elderly neighbor or whatever. I think especially someone was talking about how the climate in Maine influences the level of interaction that we have, especially at certain times of the year. And just make that extra effort to reach out to people, whether they're in your community or even a long-distance friend, to give a call. I know that when I have been feeling really isolated, even if you can't pick up the phone, just knowing that that person was thinking of you makes a huge difference. And when you are in a place to welcome those people into your home and make them feel included, you know, it may not change their life, but it's going to remind them that they're a part of something and make them feel better for at least that evening. And it'll make you feel better too.
Alex, thank you so much for your call today. Sharon on Facebook writes, one of the speakers mentioned that the reason for the health effects have to do with the lack of access to medical care. In fact, we are social beings, and social connection is salubrious to our health. The studies of societal connection on heart disease and all cause mortality in relationships are more important as a health risk than lack of exercise, smoking, and other common associations. We in the medical community have not studied this as well as we should. So I don't know what Sharon's background is, but would you agree, Dr. Ahlberg, that medicine needs to know more?
I would absolutely agree, and being a trained in the traditional sense in healthcare to take care of the physical body, maybe mental health, the emerging, as I said earlier on, the social determinants of health are probably more important than all of what we can do in our training at medical school. Unfortunately, the isolation, the loneliness is perhaps one of the most difficult social determinants of health to work on. I would just like to emphasize that it needs to be a combined effort by our healthcare systems, our communities, our payers, including government payers, the workplace, if we're going to be able to get our folks to a better place with this.
This reminds me of I've been reading through some material, and the study that was done about residents of this Greek island, I don't know if anybody remembers that, grabbed attention about a year ago because of the longevity of its residents and the resilience they had against disease and from depression to dementia and even cancer. And I think there's a lot of research on that population, identifying many factors that play a part in why people live so long with good health. But among some of those factors, one of the things that jumped out to me was that somebody said, this is an us place, it's not a me place. And that community was so central to day-to-day life, and in addition to other kind of more healthy factors. But I think that, you know, these kind of lifestyle factors, as Dr. Ahlberg has been talking about, play a big part. Yeah.
We have an email from Robin. My comment is that I'm admittedly a lonely person. I struggled with depression my whole life and filled that void with animals. Now I'm taking a break from animal ownership. I'm also a caregiver for seniors, which snaps me back into shape when I'm feeling pretty lonely myself. My savior for the last two winters has to been step outside my comfort zone, and I joined the Belfast Curling Club and learned that curling has filled in my social needs that I didn't realize I was missing. I'm 49, headed towards 50 fast, and determined to survive. So this is what you're talking about, Jeanette.
It is.
Join something, even if it's something you might not have thought you might be interested
in. Well, it's a couple of things that she said, stepping out of her comfort zone, and that, you know, is a real adaptive quality to have, to be able to allow yourself to do that, even when you know it's a reach for you. And congratulations for doing that.
And we're going to go to Julie calling from Portland. Hi, Julie. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is more about the medication that can be offered. I, for example, was diagnosed with depression a couple of years ago when my father passed away, and one of the medications I was put on actually caused me to gain weight. I had a lower sex drive, and I felt pretty miserable. And my question is why that seems like it's a pretty common side effect. So is there any thoughts on, you know, other ways to go about things or better medications that are out there that may not have that issue?
There's many different medications, and I would say trading one problem for another is typically not acceptable. So with the side effects, and those are largely from some of the older generation medications, I would encourage you to seek other ways, other medications for that, so that you're not encumbered by those side effects. They are serious. They are important.
Good luck to you, Julie. We'll move to Jake, who's calling from Clifton. Hi, Jake. Go ahead.
Hi there. Great show. I work with the crisis team in Central Maine, and I deal with a lot of clients with depression. And similar to another gentleman's point, I was listening to a podcast about having plants in your office space, and that can create, that having nature creates your mind to go from a fight or flight to a tend and befriend. And it registered with me because I found that being outside and being hiking does make my brain more receptive to connectivity, be it with people on the trail or be it you know, even after that. So just wanted to advocate for getting outside.
Thank you, Jake, for your call. We're lucky in Maine. So many of us live close to the shore, whether it's the ocean or a lake or a river. Something about the sound of water,
yeah,
I know, does it for me.
Yeah.
We'll go to Linda calling from Freedom. Hi, Linda. Go ahead. Linda, are you still there? Hello? Oh, shoot. Looks like we lost her. I understand that in the United Kingdom, there is now a minister of loneliness, and they're using all sorts of approaches, such as having postal workers check in on people and having doctors prescribe things like cooking classes for people who are lonely. Are we a little bit behind in the U.S. in terms of looking at this?
I'd love to add to that, and I've read about that. The postal workers, especially, to me, it's like the Meals on Wheels programs that we have that are just fabulous, put on steroids. I mean, after all, the postal worker goes, they go to everybody's house every day. What better way to just have a interface for a few minutes to really help decrease, you know, loneliness, not to mention be able to be alerting to any medical conditions, other issues that may have come about in someone who's isolated.
I think it's great too. And I've had, you know, I had an aunt who died a few years back, but she had contact every day with her mail delivery person, who would come in and they'd chat, and sometimes she'd have a cup of tea or something like that. But I think, you know, I think as in terms of are we behind, I think that we are. I think our society, for the most part, has historically valued individualism, our ability to go it alone is something that's admired. And I think kind of we're moving toward a more kind of to value collectivism more and more. And I think as we do, we're not, you know, human beings are not insular beings. We are social beings, and we need community. And I think that the more and more we talk about subjects such as loneliness, and bring it into the forefront and have somebody like the former Surgeon General stepping up and speaking out about it, that the more we'll see maybe perhaps some policy change that will lead to real substantial change that will affect our lives.
Linda in Freedom has called back. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much. I want to say that I think one of the major causes of loneliness that has nothing to do with what's happening externally is that we as a culture don't cultivate a relationship with ourselves and, you know, beyond skills, passions and all that, but just being alive. And meditation, mindfulness, being in nature, being quiet, being still, just self-reflection. I've discovered a depth of really good feeling that is automatically wanting to be shared with others when you find yourself. So, or, you know, it's deep pool. But all kinds of layers of that process prevent a feeling of loneliness because you're full.
Yeah. Thank you, Linda. Related to Margie's call earlier, but said in sort of different way.
Yeah, I think we're a culture of doing primarily versus being, and I think that was Linda's point that learning how to be with yourself is really protective against loneliness.
Thank you so much. We'll move to an email from Fred. A widowed neighbor in her late 70s used dating sites and met a man in a similar situation. They've been together for years. In my own case, at 60, after the end of a long marriage, I found dating sites helped. I could meet and speak with someone with no strings attached. I met some fine people and eventually my wife. So we're talking about modern times.
Right.
This is a modern time solution. We have just about a minute left, and I just wanted to know if either of you have some final thoughts about how to dig yourself out of a really lonely place.
I'll just add, I think the callers that came up with some solutions were fabulous here, and I think having more of these discussions out in the open in all different venues is what we need to move this forward as a society.
Right. I just want to say, if people feel like they're lonely, you're not alone, because so many people do, and people go through it episodically. Some people experience it chronically, but to know that it's not just you. And I think if socializing is difficult for you, one way to kind of overcome that is to try to step out of your comfort zone and join some sort of a group in the community or something that around some common interests, whether it's around music or food or gardening or exercise or some subject that interests you, because you're likely to find others that have common ground. And that might be an easier way to break the ice and get out of your bubble. And
well, thank you so much, both of you, for being here today. That was Jeanette Andonian, director and associate professor at the University of Southern Maine School of Social Work. Also here, Jeffrey Ahlberg, family medicine physician with Maine Medical Partners. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the show, the latest on Maine's marijuana regulation. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.